Vegetables like the first one, enough to fill a Walmart parking lot, say, or to make a single line 2 miles long, each with a random array of salt across it. Now, add one grain of salt to any table and let Bob Evans walk among them. At a glance, he will spot it. That grain of salt is the supernova. Evans's is a talent so exceptional that Oliver Sacks, in An Anthropologist on Mars, devotes a passage to him in a chapter on autistic savants, quickly adding that there is no suggestion that he is autistic. Evans, who has not met Sacks, laughs at the suggestion that he might be either autistic or a savant, but he is powerless to explain quite where his talent comes from. "I just seem to have a knack for memorizing star fields," he told me, with a frankly apologetic look, when I visited him and his wife Elaine in their picture book bungalow on a tranquil edge of the village of Hazelbrook, out where Sydney finally ends and the boundless Australian bush begins. "I'm not particularly good at other things," he added. "I don't remember names well." "Or where he's put things," called Elaine from the kitchen. He nodded frankly again and grinned, then asked me if I'd like to see his telescope. I had imagined that Evans would have a proper observatory in his backyard, a scaled-down version of a Mount Wilson or Palomar, with a sliding domed roof and a mechanized chair that would be a pleasure to maneuver. In fact, he led me not outside, but to a crowded storeroom off the kitchen where he keeps his books and papers, and where his telescope, a white cylinder that is about the size and shape of a household hot water tank, rests in a homemade swiveling plywood mount. When he wishes to observe, he carries them in two trips to a small deck off the kitchen. Between the overhang of the roof and the feathery tops of eucalyptus trees growing up from the slope below, he has only a letterbox view of the sky, but he says it is more than good enough for his purposes. And there, when the skies are clear and the moon not too bright, he finds his supernovae. The term supernova was coined in the 1930s by a memorably odd astrophysicist named Fritz Zwicky. Born in Bulgaria and raised in Switzerland, Zwicky came to the California Institute of Technology in the 1920s, and there at once distinguished himself by his abrasive personality and erratic talents. He didn't seem to be outstandingly bright, and many of his colleagues considered him little more than an irritating buffoon. A fitness buff, he would often drop to the floor of the Caltech dining hall or other public areas and do one-armed push-ups to demonstrate his virility to anyone who seemed inclined to doubt it. He was notoriously aggressive. His manner eventually became so intimidating that his closest collaborator, a gentleman named Walter Bard, refused to be left alone with him. Among other things, Zwicky accused Bard, who was German, of being a Nazi, which he was not. On at least one occasion, Zwicky threatened to kill Bader, who worked up the hill at the Mount Wilson Observatory, if he saw him on the Caltech campus. But Zwicky was also capable of insights of the most startling brilliance. In the early 1930s, he turned his attention to a question that had long troubled astronomers: the appearance in the sky of occasional unexplained points of light, new stars. Improbably, he wondered if the neutron, the subatomic particle that had just been discovered in England by James Chadwick and was thus both novel and rather fashionable, might be at the heart of things. It occurred to him that if a star collapsed to the sort of densities found in the core of atoms, the result would be an unimaginably compacted core. Atoms would literally be crushed together, their electrons forced into the nucleus, forming neutrons. You would have a neutron star. Imagine a million really weighty cannonballs squeezed down to the size of a marble and, well, you're still not even close. The core of a neutron star is so dense that a single spoonful of matter from it would weigh 200 billion pounds. A spoonful. But there was more. Zwicky realized that after the collapse of such a star, there would be a huge amount of energy left over, enough to make the biggest bang in the universe. He called these resultant explosions supernovae. They would be, they are, the biggest events in creation. On January the 15th, 1934, the journal Physical Review published a very concise abstract of a presentation that had been conducted by Zwicky and Bader the previous month at Stanford University. Despite its extreme brevity, one paragraph of 24 lines, the abstract contained an enormous amount of new science. It provided the first reference to supernovae and to neutron stars, convincingly explained their method of formation, correctly calculated the scale of their explosiveness, and as a kind of concluding bonus, connected supernova explosions to the production of a mysterious new phenomenon called cosmic rays, which had recently been found swarming through the universe. These ideas were revolutionary, to say the least. Neutron stars wouldn't be confirmed for 34 years. The cosmic rays notion, though considered plausible, hasn't been verified yet. Altogether, the abstract was, in the words of Caltech astrophysicist Kip S. Thorne, one of the most prescient documents in the history of physics and astronomy. Interestingly, Zwicky had almost no understanding of why any of this would happen. According to Thorne, he did not understand the laws of physics well enough to be able to substantiate his ideas. Zwicky's talent was for big ideas. Others, Baader mostly, were left to do the mathematical sweeping up. Zwicky also was the first to recognize that there wasn't nearly enough visible mass in the universe to hold galaxies together, and that there must be some other gravitational influence, what we now call dark matter. One thing he failed to see was that if a neutron star shrank enough, it would become so dense that even light couldn't escape its immense gravitational pull. You would have a black hole. Unfortunately, Zwicky was held in such disdain by most of his colleagues that his ideas attracted almost no notice. When, 5 years later, the great Robert Oppenheimer turned his attention to neutron stars in a landmark paper, he made not a single reference to any of Zwicky's work, even though Zwicky had been working for years on the same problem in an office just down the hall. Zwicky's deductions concerning dark matter wouldn't attract serious attention for nearly four decades. We can only assume that he did a lot of push-ups in this period,